Welcome to theconversation.org, making sense of these times.
Could it be? Yes, it could. Something's coming, something good. If I can wait, something's coming. I don't know what it is, but it is gonna be great.
This show is brought to you by MightyCompanions.org. And now your host, Suzanne Taylor.
I'm sitting here with Howard Carpenter, my house guest, and my dear old friends, Pennell Rock and Steve Morey, and we're about to do a lesson from The Course in Miracles. Howard is someone who spent 5 years at a place called Endeavor Academy until early last year when he left. And Endeavor Academy uses The Course in Miracles as its sacred text to wake everybody up. And Howard woke up at this place. And he's now out being a teacher of God, you might say, bringing people to this state of awareness that he lives in and exists in. And my friends Pennell and Steve are people who have been students of the Course in Miracles, such as it is presented as daily lessons for a year. And in fact, when they used to live here, we spent a year doing the course, and they're now on time 3, I think, going through it again. And here's Howard, who comes out of this very rigorous discipline of the Course in Miracles, not the popularly kind of accepted version that most people are doing, but a tremendously rigorous one where people really do get to the state that he's in. And it's not that he's so much advocating the path he took to get there, but now that he's there, he's very enthusiastic about where he is and wants everybody else to be there too. I think he's lonely. I think he wants playmates. So we've got the tape recorder on. We're planning to do the lesson for the day. We've turned it over to Howard to be the guide, and also to tune us in, not only by doing the lesson, but by telling us whatever it is he wants to tell us about what it is that he is experiencing that we can learn from. So, do you feel well introduced? Take it away.
God's voice speaks to me all through the day. It is quite possible to listen to God's voice all through the day without interrupting your regular activities in any way. The part of your mind in which truth abides is in constant communication with God, whether you are aware of it or not. It is the other part of your mind that functions in the world and obeys the world's laws. It is this part that is constantly distracted, disorganized, and highly uncertain.
Now, we are reading the lesson for the day. That's what Howard chose to begin with, one paragraph at a time. So I've got paragraph 2, and the lesson that, because Howard read it all together, but the actual bold-faced lesson of the day is, it's lesson 49 of 365 lessons, and it's, God's voice speaks to me all through the day. That's the thought of the day. So paragraph 2. The part that is listening to the voice for God is calm, always at rest, and wholly certain. It is really the only part there is. The other part is a wild illusion, frantic and distraught, but without reality of any kind. Try today not to listen to it. Try to identify with the part of your mind where stillness and peace reign forever. Try to hear God's voice call to you lovingly, reminding you that your Creator has not forgotten his son, not his daughters either.
We will need at least 4 5-minute practice periods today, and more if possible. We will try actually to hear God's voice reminding you of Him and yourself. We will approach this happiest and holiest of thoughts with confidence, knowing that in doing so, we are joining in our will with the will of God. He wants you to hear His voice. He gave it to you to be heard.
Listen in deep silence. Be very still and open your mind. Go past all the raucous shrieks and sick imaginings that cover your real thoughts and obscure your eternal link with God. Sink deep into the peace that waits for you beyond the frantic, riotous thoughts and sights and sounds of this insane world. You do not live here. We are trying to reach your real home. We are trying to reach the place where you are truly welcome. We are trying to reach God. Do not forget to repeat today's idea very frequently. Do so with your eyes open when necessary, but closed when possible. And be sure to sit quietly and repeat the idea for today whenever you can, closing your eyes on the world and realizing that you are inviting God's voice to speak to you.
At this pause, at the end of the kind of introduction to the lesson, the basic text of the lesson today, I'm just making the presumption that most people listening to this know the Course in Miracles. And if you don't, we would say perhaps a few words, Howard, about the funny language and what is this Son of God business and is it a Christian? You know, we all know that it's just sort of written that way, but that it's deeper than any particular religious perspective. But if you were listening to this for the first time, it might sound mighty strange. What do you think?
I have something to say.
Okay. This is penal for identification. Yeah. The other voice was Steve.
This truth that is here is eternal and perennial. But it always has to be spoken in a vernacular. It always has to be directed to an audience, to someone who is reading it. So it has to be translated into a language that invites the reader into this truth. And that invitation is expressed in the language of the everyday, or the language, it may be a slightly Christian language, it may be a more Hindu language, it may be a Buddhist language, and this particular one was addressed into a basically Christian language. It doesn't mean that it's a Christian perspective.
It's not only a Christian language, it's presumably Christ speaking, is it not?
No, it would be the Holy Spirit.
Or the Holy Spirit speaking, okay, excuse me. Right.
So the Holy Spirit is speaking into a language that the Holy Spirit is directing towards an audience and trying to speak it in the way that it can best be understood. This is a very dualistic language. There's your reality and then the truth. That's a language of duality, but as all of us here understand and see and know to some extent or other, there is a non-duality, a level of non-duality, and this is where the Course wants to bring us. This is presumably Howard's intense invitation. So the language reaches out to you in a language that it feels that you can understand. So it doesn't matter what the language is. Your listeners should be aware that it's not about the language that it's written in, it's about the truth that it's trying to convey.
You know, in fact, what I do know about Howard's background, where he spent 5 years at Endeavor Academy, which is using this as a sacred text, is that the people at Endeavor who are teaching from this didn't actually wake up from this. They woke up from something else, and then this became a handy tool to use. Have I said here that Howard is an awakened person who, we should say this, Howard presents himself as an awakened person. What do I know, you know? this is all very confusing to most of us. What does really awake mean and what doesn't it mean? Having had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with Howard, I see that he's living someplace different from where I'm living. I recognize that place. It's very familiar to me. I can talk about it. But there's a kind of a permanent state of joyfulness that Howard comes from that is not my way. Now, is this because I just have a different personality? Maybe, but maybe not. Maybe Howard has actually turned into something. And that's what, you know, he might change that language on me, but that's my way to say, to describe what he's experiencing and what he wants us to experience. He wants playmates in this wonderful, clear, ecstatic place. Now, Howard, let's turn this over to you for a bit.
First of all, I want to say that The Course in Miracles was written by you. Not the you that you identify with, but the you that you really are. You see, the Course is simply your truth. The truth that you have been denying for millennia. The truth that you can stop denying right now and just say yes to. Forget about how the Course appears to be written. The fact that it doesn't even use the female gender is never referred to even once in the Course. Why? Because there is no female gender. There is no male gender. It's all a joke. So rather than give reality to something that's false, don't be concerned about that. Why should you be concerned about it? You wrote the Course. As a matter of fact, you made up the whole world. You made up everything in it. It's all your manifestation. You did it. Why should you be concerned about any of it? That just makes it real. It makes what is false real. So I say give it all up. Pay no attention to person, place, or thing. Do the Course, and you'll discover what I'm talking about. And you'll never be the same again. Guaranteed. Or double your money back. Yay!
Well, there's a radical figure ground reversal involved, obviously, in where you are speaking from. It goes beyond the mental idea of it into a state of being. And in our understanding, our normal understanding, the world doesn't exist is a silly thing to say. There it is, I'm looking at it, you know. But what I understand you're trying to do is to anchor in some place from which you could see a truth in that statement.
You see, this is an hallucination. Now, you've had hallucinatory experiences of some degree, and when you're in them, I don't know what your experience is, you might think that it's real at the moment, but when you come out of it, you know that that's totally different from your normal waking state, just like the dream when you dream at night. Sometimes that dream at night can be very real to you, even so real you can say, my God, that was more real than the waking state. So what is real? I tell you, none of it. None of it's real. Your waking state is no more real than the dream state. So I tell you, the world you think is real is just as real as your dream state. So stop paying attention to it. Stop giving it value. Stop giving it meaning. The very first lesson in the workbook of The Course in Miracles: nothing I see means anything. When you do that lesson, you really do it. You begin to loosen your attachment to person, place, and thing. The second lesson: I have given everything I see all the meaning it has for me. And you discover, yes, you do give everything meaning. But the truth of the matter is, it doesn't have meaning in of itself. And when you loosen the meaning you give everything, you begin to discover something else. And that something else is what you are It's all-pervading because it's the only thing in it that exists. And everything else is just images placed on this reality. And you've gotten distracted and you identify with the reality, with the images, as though that's your truth. And that's where the workbook of the Course in Miracles comes in, to help you see through all of these images that you have projected outwards. And then you begin to discover happiness itself. It's not dependent upon this world at all. And that's what I've discovered. And I invite you to join with me where I abide, which is not in this world. My mind is free, my mind is whole, and I want you to join with me there. The truth of the matter is you're already with me. You just are denying it. And your denying it keeps you bound to a mud ball that's circling the universe, going nowhere. And I say, you're pretending to be on this mud ball, and you're not, in fact, but you will never know that until you give up. Give up your self-identity. It only leads to death. And that's a joke, because you can't die. So stop pretending that you're going to die.
Well, the Course is a day after day, ever more subtle, you might say, kind of presentation of this detached other place. It's like a practice. Every day you practice and you practice and you practice. And what you're practicing is, what I understand to be, you're practicing the reality that is more real than the one we are in terms of the fact that you're a product of cultural conditioning. You think what you identify as significant is relatively insignificant. You would say not significant.
Fake it until you make it.
Fake it until you make it, right. Right. And the Course is a wonderful aid to the faking of it, you might say. But Howard is a wonderful resource because, you know, he's calling from this place and he knows it from the inside, you know. He's not trying to get there. His second year of his five at Endeavor Academy, apparently he had this crossover experience. And are all the people there crossed over into this awakened state?
Yes.
And there's like 50 people there?
250 to 500, but...
Worldwide?
Yeah, but the point is that there's only you. There's only you. There's nobody else. There's no Endeavor Academy. There's no... Person, place, or thing is a distraction. That there's just you, immaculate you, eternal you.
And Howard, I know because you've been talking to me, there's you that joins with others, and that joining is an incredibly ecstatic experience.
Yes, I refer to joining simply because you think that you're a separate being and there's other separate people. And I tell you that's not true. That there is only one being, there's only one mind, the mind of God, which you are that. And when you let yourself, allow yourself to experience the truth of that, you find yourself not separate from your brother, not separate from me. I abide there. But it's a lonely place when all those that appear to be around me are pretending to not be there. It's frustrating. It's like, wake up, give yourself a break.
I don't know about this frustration, Howard. We could go into this a little bit and see if there's some chink in the armor there. But I accept it. I understand it. And maybe that's not good. I'm not supposed to understand anything. Ah, well, did we mention who's on first? For an audience too young to remember.
You see, in this so-called world, being awake, being enlightened, doesn't mean that you won't experience all the emotions. You can feel frustration still. You can feel anger and pain and loss, but only for a moment. You experience it for just an instant. You see it's there. You release it to the light, and you're free. It's just a reminder that this place isn't real, not to give it value and meaning. If I was totally free of all these emotions, I wouldn't even be talking to you. I wouldn't even be here. So it's a blessing that awake minds still have a little something holding them here so they can be of value to you right here. They're available to you. Because when it's over, it's over. And they're not here anymore.
I like that, Howard. I like that a lot.
So that's my gift, is to get frustrated for a moment, and then just to give that up to the light. And it's gone, and I'm happy. Happiness is my true nature. And everything that's true for me is not different from you, because, in fact, there is no difference between you and me. It's only you're pretending that there is. That's the only problem. And that's not even a problem, because that's a pretend. We all know what Hollywood is like. It's not real.
Why do you suppose this pretense is so compelling? Why is it that you're drawn into it in your momentary frustration, and in varying degrees, we're more and more drawn into it until the point where we're really identified with it?
See, you will never get anywhere when you think that I'm separate from you and you're going to ask me a question. You've got to know that you're speaking to yourself always, that there's only you. And so I say, if you want to know the answer to any question, then take responsibility for the question and the answer at the same time, because cause and effect are not apart. The answer is always in the question, and only you can get it, because there is only you.
Well, did you get your question answered?
That was a conversation stopper.
Yes, I'm a great conversation stopper. Conversations are simply a way to continue the illusion of separation by thinking that there's somebody that I'm going to talk to. That gets you nowhere.
This is a radio show, Harry. Help me!
If we took the proportion of who's spoken most, you certainly would win the prize.
I am going to say that if you get what I'm saying, there's nobody that you're listening to except you.
What should we do for fun after that, Howard? Should we go to the movies or anything?
The fun abides out of time where I reside. And when you see, the world would disappear if everybody joined with me, because then you wouldn't want to do anything else. You wouldn't spend money for dinners and movies and shows and travel or anything. You just want to abide every single moment in this incredible place of joining, because there is nothing else in truth.
Is that what really the external life would look like? Seriously, you lose your interest in art and music and what have you, seriously? And you just want to be with others in this?
Well, what happened is the whole world would disappear, and you wouldn't even have a memory of it. You would find yourself in what, for lack of a better word, we'd call heaven, where there is no such thing as form. Form is dense thought. It's heavy. You're so used to it, you don't know that.
Would that stop that garbage truck?
There's no garbage truck to stop. You'd realize there is no garbage truck, and you'd be happy.
So, Howard, I see that the way you spend your time is recruiting, so to speak. I mean that in the best way. Opening people to join with you, hopefully. But let's say that had occurred. So that gives you some way to, you know, I can watch your day and see you do that. But let's say that had occurred and you were with others, as I guess you were at the academy, where you are in this state, then what does a day look like?
A day is non-existent. There is only the love of God. There's only the truth of who you are. That's everything. Anything else that you think you see or hear or experience is nothing.
Another conversation stopper, but I'm not stopping. So, Howard, I'm an observer, let's say, and I don't even know anything about what you're doing, but I'm cataloging your moves. What are you doing during the day if you're surrounded by people who are awake? What are you all doing? Seriously, that's a real question.
The only thing we're doing is being. Anything else that appears is an appearance. It has no value, it has no meaning, it has no substance.
But I wasn't asking you for a teaching. I was asking you for objective reporting. Like, you know, you get up in the morning and you breakfast.
You eat, you pay the phone bill.
If there's things to do, they get done. These things happen. They're of no consequence. To resist them and to say that they're not real is making them real by resistance. But just to see whatever is in front of you at the moment and respond according to that particular moment, then you're just being. You're not resisting, you're not avoiding, and you're also not giving meaning and value. You're just being. And you're allowing yourself to be shown what to do and what to say and where to go. But these things that you appear to do have no value, no substance, no meaning. They just appear.
Would movies appear and television appear?
Whatever appears, appears.
But I'm asking you really, because you've been with people who are hanging out in this state. I want to know what their life looks like. Just for, you know.
Their life, if you want to put those terms to it, it's you, it's all you. Your life appears normal. But as an awake mind, you're free of it.
But again, you're back here.
You appear to be in it like any other human being, but you're not of it.
But this is the teaching aspect that you're telling me of how the attitude is and the understanding is, and I'm just asking you for the outer external activity aspect of it.
If you categorize it in the terms that you're doing, you cannot hear this message. You have to give up your categorization. Is what Howard's saying fitting into the mold that I want to hear?
This is where it gets gritty, you know. This is where it gets difficult.
This is why it's so hard for people to discover who they are. Because they have these concepts. They have these understandings. And they fit things into these categories. And that is the problem. That is what the separation is. And I tell you, give that up. Just be here and now, totally in this moment, without critiquing it, without putting it into a category, but simply surrender to this moment, because you are making up this moment every moment. It's you making it up, it's you speaking. It's not somebody else speaking. And you will never get it if you're going to analyze it, if you're going to judge it, if you're going to critique it.
Analyze, judge, and critique were none of the things that I was engaged in. And I know, I understand
right
what
now
you're
you are engaged in that, because you're judging it that, oh no, I wasn't doing that. You see, immediately you miss it.
Well, you see, here's where the argument comes in.
Argument. As long as you got an argument, you got two. When you give up the argument, you can discover something beyond the argument.
But I would say you're in the argument with me.
Yes, you see, this is the thing. Split mind can never understand whole mind. Split mind says, whole mind, you're doing exactly what I might do. And I say, no, I'm coming from a whole space. It's all the difference in the world. It appears the same. To a split mind, it appears the same.
You know, back to this conversation that we had yesterday about what I suggested as the dual existence we spend in the absolute and the relative. The relative is not where you so-called live when you're in the awareness that you're in, but it still exists. You still get up in the morning, you eat breakfast, you feed the body, you take care of it, you know, you nurse it when it's sick, which has no value in it in terms of good or bad. It's just the activity of the body. And so I'm asking you about body activity, and why do we have to not talk about that? And why would that be some indication of not being able to exist in the absolute, if you're even conversing about the relative? He seems to be indicating that he's finished. We just got blessed. Talk about a conversation stopper. Oh, Howard has left us. No relative conversation
here. I mean, my other main discipline that I'm working with, discipline as opposed to a philosophy or a thought system, which is my Vajrayana practice as part of a Rika, we call this the absolute mind, the relative mind, and the enlightened mind we call the ornamental mind. So you're in this absoluteness, as he's speaking of, and everything is ornament. It has no value. This is what he was trying to say, doesn't it? You're not living in the value of it. You're not living in the investment in it.
Exactly.
It's just an ornament. And everything is just an ornament. And they call that the ornamental mind, and that is the enlightened mind.
It's wonderful also, by the way, making a little comment here, that when you get into the heart of all truly authentic sacred paths or perspectives, they're all the same. You find that you're talking about it now from this teaching, you know.
Yes. Well, this is what I say, that it is a trueness.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of these things have been so long disputed and discussed and carried on in India. I mean, 2,500 years ago, these disputes were, is there one reality, is there two realities, is there... And then Buddha came along and said, reality does not fit the case. The whole question about what's real and what isn't real, that actually there's nothing. And the more you can be in that nothing, that luminous nothing, that is the issue. It's not whether anything exists or doesn't exist. This is very beautiful, and I watched it and listened from my heart to the whole dialogue, and there is a place where Howard stands, and he is speaking from out of that place, and he doesn't want to compromise with the integrity of that space, and this is why he danced away. He challenged when you tried to bring him back into that reality. You kept trying to bring him back into that reality, and then he danced away because he sees himself in the dance. It was quite a beautifully choreographed theatrical piece.
Yes, really. Well, bless him, you know, bless him.
I noticed that there is this continuum. I see it as a continuum. And the continuum is from being completely identified with this reality, this here, this world, this bill that has to be paid, this noise that's going on, this problem in my life, this whatever, and completely identified in that and completely seeing that as reality. And then you start working with these teachings and you start hearing, oh, there's something else over there. And gradually that something else over there, you start getting more and more clarity about it. And you do this, you study this philosophy, and you see it expressed in that philosophy, and you see it in this philosophy, and you start maybe meeting some people who say they're over there, and it becomes more and more a vision. The Buddhists call it a vision. You start having the vision of this other place to be in. And
That's our bird clock. It's, I don't know. I hope it was a good accompaniment for that, you know, featured spot you just had there.
It was absolutely
perfect.
Bird from the center of the
vision.
Yes. The bird was singing from that. So it begins beckoning to us.
Yes, okay.
And we begin moving closer and closer to us, to it. And the danger is, and this was always a danger in the Upanishads, it says those who are in complete ignorance, are in darkness, but the ones who think they know are in greater darkness still. So there's a point where you have the vision over there and you're able to completely language it and theorize about it, but you're not actually in
right.
it. And that, they say, is even darker than the ignorance. But then there's this place, a step over into this place. And Howard presumably has made that step and is calling from that step, speaking from that step, from that place. And that's the thing. We're moving along this continuum towards it. And it's a big step. That is a big step.
Well, that's into the
it.
Step.
Out of the vision
yeah.
of it,
yeah.
the concept of it.
The understanding
it.
Of it. Yes.
The understanding.
Yeah.
All that stuff is happening right here. But here is a place of being in it. And that is, I mean, we are very attracted to find people who are in that place and who could speak to us from that place. We're going off to see Aaliyah today, you know, because she somehow stands in that place.
One way you can think about it is that that really is our home, and we got born into a cultural conditioning that tribal societies perhaps don't have, where they feel very connected to the source and to each other. And here we are in this highly cultivated culture where we are identifying with all those external things instead of those internal things, and yet that internal is our source. So that when we are around people who have, by grace or what have you, made that crossover, it really helps us. It's like a beacon to sound the beam of our essential self. And as you are around the beacon, feeling the beam, you more and more are able to resonate with it. That's what it seems to me. Now this crossover into that awakened state, fascinating, isn't it? Fascinating to know as much as the three of us sitting here know, and yet be aware that there are people like Howard, let's say, like Aaliyah. Something's happened to them. They have no doubts anymore. They're not subject somehow to the same pains and sufferings that we are. And I wonder if that's a state that, in fact, humanity could find itself in, or if there will always only be a very few. And they are, you know, our guides and helpers.
I see it everywhere. This is the essential aspiration, vision held by what we call the human potential movement, that is a real space, that it's home, and that somehow we're evolving to a place where we all will get there and create our reality out of that place. That is the essential tenet of what I call California optimisticism.
I like that word. I think you got that from me years ago. The optimistical age. I wrote a paper. I toy with ideas about this awakened state, wondering if I am discerning something, because as we all move along, we're all kind of seeing with new eyes. As we live in an evolving humanity, maybe there's an evolving even beyond, let's say, Buddha or Christ. At some level, not, you know, at some level, they're the goods. But maybe there's something else that is the state interwoven with the current culture. And I think of it as what I name everyday God, that it's not about having had this mystical experience or this crossover experience in some dramatic way that places you permanently in this very unique, relatively unique state that very few people are in, but that there's something that can happen to all of us in this optimistical age that is much more ordinary looking, but it's still the same thing. And it's a kind of acceptance of the way it is, and the emotional roller coaster even that is involved in that. But there's still a seeing that emotional roller coaster from a place where you can witness it. And it's that place you're witnessing from that really is accessible to us, that really is just there, that really is what we would have understood if we hadn't been born into this highly civilized culture. And that we in this modern day, where there's so much seeking going on, where there's so much attraction to these teachers, this wave of teachers has been flooding the country lately of Advaita teachers who are teaching this non-dual way. There's perhaps some ascension that we'll all come to where we look in each other's eyes, we're full of love, we're full of respect, we're full of willingness, we're full of acceptance, and we're recognizing that this is perfectly fine as what we can consider realized, and that somehow we hold each other into it. It's not that same thing as that crossover into that, you know, thing that happens when you have a near-death experience, for instance. That's a dramatic way to get there. The place that Howard has so dramatically moved into. Maybe the drama isn't the end of the rainbow. Maybe there's something less dramatic that's just a kind of a acknowledgement that we can make among one another that here we are. And we can live in a kind of joy that way that really has taken us out of the nightmare of identification with so much that we experience as suffering. And that creates a gentler, sweeter, really accessible reality that we can almost just talk ourselves into. You know, we have to have some background in understanding this setup here, the kind of map as I think of it. We don't have to be seekers forever. It is something genuine that we can come to that's as good as we would want it to be, and maybe as good as it gets. And it's not an isolated Christ or a Buddha anymore, or even an isolated Howard or Aaliyah. What do you think about that? Am I making sense?
Well, this is a perennial hope. This is the perennial hope of the second coming. The second coming is that it's going to come to all of us, and it's going to become the reality of our reality, not just an isolated thing there that one person achieved.
Well, I think we're in the second coming. I think that buzz in the background is not going away now. At least the airplanes come and go. Now we've acquired a permanent buzz, which might really be the beam. You know, it came in.
That's
so
right.
That it would echo.
There
this
is the
singularity.
The permanent buzz is there, so listen to it and go there.
Are we finished? Thank you all.
Thank
you, Panel Rock, and the more silent Steve Morey, whom
he's the silent
I know.
Presence.
Yes, he is the silent presence. He's probably deeper in it than all of us. And hopefully we have provided you all with some opportunity to dance in the mysteries. Till next time, over and out.
Thank you for listening to theconversation.org, Making Sense of These Times. Now that you've heard from us, we'd love to hear from you. Click the feedback button on the show's webpage and share your thoughts. We'll be posting new shows approximately once a week. If you would like to be emailed when new shows are posted, let us know. This show is brought to you by MightyCompanions.org, dedicated to encouraging the awareness of ourselves as a one life and providing a meeting ground for those who share that awareness.